Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, and the beginning of Chapter 15, which is entitled Lord Krishna's Description of Mystic Yoga Perfections. I'll read the summary and text 1. This chapter describes the 8 primary and 10 minor mystic perfections. They are developed by fixing one's mind in yoga, but they are ultimately obstructions to achieving the spiritual abode of Lord Vishnu. Being questioned by Uddhava, Lord Krishna describes the characteristics of the 18 mystic perfections and the particular kind of meditation by which each is achieved. In conclusion, Krishna states that for one who desires to perform pure devotional service to the personality of Godhead, the achievement of these mystic perfections is a waste of time, because they distract one from proper worship. All these perfections are automatically offered to a pure devotee, but he does not accept them, unless using the yoga of devotional service. These perfections are valueless. A devotee simply sees that the personality of Godhead is always present everywhere, both externally and internally, and depends completely upon him. Text 1. Shri Bhagavanu Vacha Jitendriyasya Yuktasya Jitendriyasya Yuktasya Jitasvasasya Yogina Jitasvasasya Yogina Maridaya tascheta Upatisthanti Siddhaya Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Jitendriyasya Yuktasya Jitasvasasya Yogina Maritaraya Tischeta Upatisthanti Siddhaya Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Jitendriyasya Yuktasya Jitasvasasya Yogina Maritaraya Tascheta Upatisthanti Siddhaya Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Jita Indriyasya, of one who has conquered his senses. Yuktasya, who has steadied the mind. Jita Svasasya, and conquered his breathing system. Yogina, of such a yogi. Mayi, in me. Dharayata, fixing. Cheta is consciousness. Upatisthanti, appear. Siddhaya, the mystic perfections of yoga. Translation by the servants of Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, My dear Uddhava, the mystic perfections of yoga are acquired by a yogi who has conquered his senses, steadied his mind, conquered the breathing process, and fixed his mind on me. Translation responsibly. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, My dear Uddhava, the mystic perfections of yoga are acquired by a yogi who has conquered his senses, steadied his mind, conquered the breathing process, and fixed his mind on me. Purport. There are 8 primary mystic perfections, such as anima siddhi, and 10 secondary perfections. In the 15th chapter, Lord Krishna will explain that such mystic perfections are actually impediments to the development of Krishna consciousness, and that therefore one should not desire them. Om Ajnana Timurandasya Ajnana Surakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manavistam Stakisam Yena Pusale Swayam Upakadama Yantadati Swapanantikam Panchakalpatrivischa Kripa Sindhubya Eva Champatita Nam Pavnebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Siva Sadi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram 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 Hare Hare Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastabhuti Shrimati Bhagavata Swami Chanami Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastabhuti Shrimati Bhaktivinoda Swami Chanami Namaste Sarasati Devi So this is the beginning of a new chapter where Lord Krishna again is going to verify the extreme tedious acts of trying to follow the Ashtanga Yoga system or the different systems of yoga that may give one mystic perfections, and of course continuing to establish the supremacy of bhakti yoga, of devotional service, above all the descriptions that he's given. So previously in chapter 14, where he's explaining the yoga system, Lord Krishna gives descriptions of the hatha yoga process and mentions about the jnana yoga process and how all of them are actually very subservient to the practice of devotional service or bhakti yoga. And there's this comparison that's been made, and specifically to highlight the different aspects of bhakti yoga that show, that make it the best yoga process or the topmost yoga process. So Krishna finishes off chapter 14 by explaining how by practicing pure devotional service, not only do we get to realize who we are, but we also get to realize who we are in relationship to Krishna. And Krishna himself is explaining how he becomes conquered and how he becomes controlled by pure devotional service, or by those who have attained that platform of practicing pure devotional service. So here in chapter 15, Krishna is beginning to explain this mystic yoga perfections, the 8 primary and the other 10 minor mystic perfections. And of course, in each yoga system, there's always the establishment of those rules and regulations that one lays as their foundation for them to be able to actually go on the process and achieve the goal of that specific process. So as we read on in the chapter, in the purport, it's described how with each perfection there's specific processes that you follow that will only give you a specific realization, or that will only take you to a specific point in yoga practice. So it's not that all the different yoga systems all these mystic perfections are going to guide us towards realizing the absolute truth, Bhagavan. And as Gangeshwar Prabhu yesterday was explaining how in most of these yoga systems, yes, we can be elevating ourselves, and we get awarded these different perfections or certain yogic perfections, but they are devoid of the realization that we are eternal servants of Krishna. So they may highlight the point that yes, Krishna is residing in the heart, or Krishna is all pervasive in his Brahman aspect, or that Krishna is within all different atoms, but they don't give this very pinnacle of devotional service that makes us understand that we are actually eternal servants of Krishna. So in some of these systems, we find that you become elevated. You are established more on the mode of goodness because of austerity, because of the piety that we're performing. But that's not, of course, to be mixed with the highest form of yoga. They only bring about a certain realization, but they don't make us understand our eternal, our constitutional position, that we're eternal servants of Krishna. And this is what the process of bhakti, or the process of devotional service, it makes us realize by practically performing service through the agents, through the senses, by doing things practically, that we're actually servants of God. So this is something that we can see if we speak to people, or if we're preaching, mostly if we just use the term spiritual life or self-realization. The first thing that will always come up is, you know, controlling the mind and the senses and living a regulated life, but that's just the beginning stages. Pretty rarely we'll find that there's an understanding that, you know, spiritual life or spiritual activity is supposed to bring us to a point of realizing that we're servants of God, eternal servants of God. So this point is missed in the different explanations of what yoga practice is, or what the goal of yoga is. And that is why in most of these purports, Krishna is going to be showing that these mystic perfections, or these qualities that we get given from Krishna, because Krishna, of course, is the master. Krishna is Yogeshwara, so Krishna has all these potencies in full. Because we're his parts and parcels, we get minute quantities of those. We get given those perfections depending on our, you know, our austerity or our endeavors to know Krishna in a specific way. So Krishna is going to start explaining that these mystic perfections, or these different ways of controlling the mind and senses, can be an impediment to trying to practice pure devotional service. And we can just analyze that for ourselves. You know, you get different energies of the Lord, the external energy, the internal energy, and the marginal potency, in which, you know, the living entities are the marginal potency of the Lord. So there is that tendency to want to enjoy separately. And we can see with ourselves, as soon as we get given a little bit of independence or some leeway to do something by ourselves, it's very easy for us to get puffed up and forget where we're actually getting all these facilities from. So imagine for us, we have different personalities who are still in this world, who have, to certain degrees, they have conquered the senses. We can see that they don't get easily disturbed, and we can see that they're more or less not so much in the mode of ignorance. They're practicing some yoga system. They're either, you know, practicing their Stanga yoga system to a certain degree, or they're within different religions or whatever. But then we can see that because they're situated on a higher platform as compared to other people in general, then there is that tendency to become proud. There's that tendency to want to become the enjoyer. Because when you're proud, you see yourself as higher than everyone. So it's very easy to get into the mentality of wanting to enjoy and wanting to lord over your environment. So these mystic perfections very easily do that for a conditioned soul who is not aware of the goal of the yoga system. Of course, the goal of the yoga system is to be meditating on Krishna. And in chapter 14, Krishna was explaining how, you know, even in the Ashtanga yoga system, the eight, you know, Ashta means eight, the eight limb system of yoga, you know, you situate your body in a specific way, and gradually you move your life air through the different chakras. And as I was speaking the other day, with these chakras, of course, they, from the Muladhara chakra, the lowest chakra, moving right up, a yogi will then start to actually realize or get off the body concept of life, because these different chakras produce within us a different mentality. So if we're stuck, if we identify too much with our tribe or our community, you know, there is that body identification. And if you go even beyond the Muladhara chakra over the solar plexus, you know, there is that identification with the body, with with who we are, women, men, all these things. So what the chakras in the yoga system were actually meant to gradually get off the bodily concept of life. So from the gross level to the subtle level, and of course the highest point is to realize that we're spirit soul. So that's how Krishna was explaining how, you know, even as a yogi you have to, you know, follow certain processes, but of course the goal, as Krishna was explaining in that chapter, was in samadhi, of course we have to be meditating on Vishnu. But hardly, of course, nowadays, because that's not the yoga process. People are not meditating on Vishnu. And people hardly get beyond that point of actually raising their life as beyond, you know, these gross chakras. Or to speak of going to the, you know, the topmost chakra, where the soul leaves the body. So that's a very, as Prabhupada was explaining, this process of mystic yoga is a very, you know, laborious activity as compared to the simple and sweet process of devotional service. And towards the end of chapter 14, in the purport, the disciples of Srila Prabhupada were explaining that there have been those personalities who have achieved a lot of success in practicing this yoga system. And Srila Prabhupada explains how, yes, we should be very, what was the word he used? Something to do with how we should be respectful to them, but at the same time we should know our position. We should know the position of devotional service, that yes, you do have people performing wonderful acts because they've conquered the mind and the senses, but we should know that that's not the highest. That's not what the point of human life is about. We're not practicing devotional service just to control the senses. We're not practicing devotional service just to follow the four regulative principles. Of course, that helps us in devotional service, but we practice devotional service to re-establish this love that we have with Krishna and to remind ourselves that we're actually eternal servants of God. So devotional service does all these things. Devotional service makes us control the mind, the senses. Devotional service ultimately makes us realize of our eternal constitutional position. And it makes us realize the most important thing, that Krishna is the only enjoyer. Krishna is the only controller, and we're his servants. So the Brahma Samhita is clearly explained in the first verse that Krishna is Bhagavan. No, Swarup is not Bhagavan. No, Mahatma Prabhu is not Bhagavan. No, Chaitanya Prabhu is not Bhagavan. You know, we're servants of Bhagavan. And in specific instances, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, certain personalities are called Bhagavan as well. Lord Brahma sometimes is called Bhagavan. But that's to show, you know, in that specific situation, how he's abiding with the instructions of his Lord and Master, and how he's acting in that specific way, in that proper way. And because he has those qualities and he's not misdirecting the opulences that the Lord gives him, then he becomes praised as Bhagavan. Same as Narada Muni. He is sometimes referred to as well as Bhagavan. But of course the mentality of one who's, you know, explained as such, and he always sees himself as a servant of the Lord. Yudhishthira Prabhupada, you know, he got given so many titles, and he always said, I'm just a servant of my spiritual master. So that is the mood that comes out of a devotee. And Lord Krishna puts the devotee in that situation to show the glory of his devotees. That the devotee who is practicing pure devotional service doesn't get carried away with all this opulence that's given to him. Same with the four Kumaras in the third canto. You know, the four Kumaras, they have perfected the mystic yoga process, but they are using it in devotional service. They have explained how when they wanted to go hear Srimad Bhagavatam from Anantashesh, in the lowest region of the universe, that there with their mystic perfections, along with the other sages, they traveled along the Ganges River so that they could go and hear Srimad Bhagavatam. So these are different examples that we can see when devotees are awarded these mystic perfections, although they don't specifically have that as their goal. Lord Krishna awards them these attributes, then they use that in devotional service. In that way, it doesn't become an impediment. But Lord Krishna here is going to further elaborately explain how these mystic yoga perfections for a living entity can become impediments to want to practice devotional service because of our tendency to want to be separate from Krishna. Like that. So this process, in this chapter, the first few things that I explained is, you know, conquering the senses and steadying the mind. So of course, in order for that to happen, we cannot conquer our senses without having to steady the mind. Because this is, the mind is where everything starts formulating and taking place. So the mind actually is supposed to be in the mode of goodness, but in Kali Yuga, because of the qualities of Kali Yuga, the mind is always disturbed. So when the mind is disturbed, naturally the senses will also become a bit all over the place. And that's why the senses sometimes are explained, or the analogy is used to explain the senses as a serpent or a wife. You know, it pulls you here, pulls you there, takes you there, want this, that. That's how the senses are acting under the conditions of Kali Yuga. But when one takes to a yoga process, of course, especially devotional service, we start controlling the mind. So devotees are, of course, the topmost yogis, because devotees know what the process is for controlling the mind. So the process for controlling the mind for this specific situation that we're in, of course, is the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. So by learning to control the mind, then we actually get to deal with our senses. And of course, we know in scripture and the Nectar of Instruction, Srila Prabhupada has explained how the most ferocious sense, of course, is the tongue. That the tongue, because, you know, we hear so many things, you know, we want to broadcast our glories, we want to, you know, establish how we are supreme, or, you know, we want to establish our pride, our wealth, all these things. That comes through the power of speech. And then, of course, we have to eat something. And we do know that what we eat affects our consciousness. So it affects our entire thinking process. So by practicing devotional service, Srila Prabhupada has given us a very powerful system of becoming the topmost yogi without having to separately endeavor to practice Ashtanga Yoga or Kundalini Yoga or any other yoga system. That the entire program that we have of, you know, repeating the words of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and that's why he translated all these books, so that we can get to take in the message and be able to relay the message to those that we meet. And in that way, our tongue, our speech, you know, becomes purified. And by honoring prasadam, we don't infect people with our germs of Kali Yuga. So if we're controlling the tongue, you know, our topics are not the topics of crows. Our topics become the topics of Srimad Bhagavatam, or in relation to Srimad Bhagavatam. And it's very easy to train our mind to do that, because that's what a yogi is doing. A yogi, through the breathing, through the pranayam, through the asanas, we're actually trying to steady the mind and fix it on our desired goal. And for us, that is Krishna. So by following this system of yoga, by following specifically devotional service, it's actually incorporated everything. It's incorporating this system of fixing our mind, this system of controlling the senses. We don't have to separately endeavor for it outside of devotional service. And Lord Krishna is going to explain all these, how one gets all these different mystic perfections and how strenuous it is. Whereas in devotional service, we follow the system that's been given, that contains everything. Remembrance of Krishna, you know, speaking about Krishna, purifying the senses, purifying the mind, and being able ultimately to fix the mind on Krishna. So this is the goal. This is what Krishna is going to establish in the next few texts here that he's explaining to Uddhava. And Uddhava, of course, Uddhava is a confidential associate of Krishna, so Uddhava is not, you know, Uddhava is not conditioned like ourselves. We can analyze our behavior when we get given instructions sometimes. sometimes, you know, we hear, because of our, you know, lack of intelligence, you can hear an instruction once not to do this, but then we go ahead and do it. And then we can be shown this is what will happen to you when you perform this act, but we still do it. And then again, we get punished for it, and only after that do we actually then, our intelligence start kicking in. So, Lord Krishna, in so many chapters, will, in the last three chapters, he's repeating how he's going to establish that Bhakti Yoga is the highest. So he's already explained that in chapter 14, and at the same time, he's going to now, you know, really break down these mystic yoga perfections and again establish that Bhakti Yoga is supreme. Because this is something that we need to hear over and over again, because you get so many systems, you know, that look like they're very practical, and because of our different desires we might be driven for that because of identifying with the body and because of wanting to enjoy gross and subtle. So you might get attracted to Jnana Yoga because we want to enjoy. That's, you know, the sense gratification that comes from knowledge, or the sense gratification that comes from perfecting different physical postures. So Lord Krishna is going to gradually cut down all these different systems and again re-establish the point that Bhakti or devotional service is the highest yoga. So here, the last line of the purport speaks about how we shouldn't desire these mystic perfections. You know, very often we may hear of someone who, you know, for some people, especially growing up in the Western countries, when you see someone walking on coal, you know, we used to see this a lot on TV in India, you have these different babas, and they start walking for like, I don't know, maybe from that end to that end, and he just walks as if he's walking on grass, and it's like hot, like super hot coal, and everyone thinks, oh, he's so spiritual, or he's so powerful. Or someone takes a spoon and bends it with their mental capacity, and everyone thinks, oh, he's so spiritual, he's such an elevated person. So for us, it's easy, you know, to see how some people have some, you know, mental strength and mental abilities. So for us, it's very easy for normal conditioned people to get bewildered and to be misdirected and think that this is actually something that's very high. So these are not the things that we should be desiring. We shouldn't be desiring to be able to just take one breath in 8 months, or be able to just drink a handful of coconut milk once a week. You know, all these different things that may seem to be really topmost in yoga practice. So how much you're renounced, how much you're giving in charity. You know, this is not the aim of devotional service, this is not the aim of Bhakti Yoga. The aim is to become desireless, and desireless meaning that our desires are just fixed on pleasing Krishna. Because when Krishna is pleased, we automatically become pleased as well. And this is something, of course, that's very mystical about devotional service, that we're not trying to act for our own selfish interests, we're trying to act for Krishna. Although sometimes, you know, we never, Krishna doesn't come off the altar and speak to us, or, you know, Srimati Radharani won't come and sit with us and have prasadam or anything like that. So one may ask, you know, how are you getting all these things? Do you know Krishna? Have you spoken to Krishna? Now, how do you know? But we can analyze with our life that Krishna is constantly providing everything for us. Especially, you know, if you're taking time out and you're staying in a temple, or you're staying in different places where you're depending on Krishna for everything. You're depending on Krishna to give you clothes, you're depending on Krishna for prasadam, you're depending on Krishna for everything. So still, there's this person who is seen as the most powerful, this Yogeshwar, Krishna, who possesses all these mystic perfections in full. He's taking care of each and every single devotee to the fullest degree. So this is something that, you know, any mundane person or anyone with material consciousness can't understand how Bhakti Yoga is so supreme. Because all we do is we follow the process that Krishna himself has given, and he reciprocates by taking care of us so that we may gradually make our way. So by serving Krishna, by just having the desire to serve Krishna, then we won't get attracted to all these other different mystic perfections or yoga perfections. But of course, Krishna himself, you know, for any system of yoga is, you know, you have to work hard. It's not that, oh, devotional service is so easy, I'll just sit down and chant my rounds and wash my cloth and go for the festival and dance in kirtan. We have to work on ourselves internally and externally. So it has to be a regular practice that we do to check and see how or where we're situated, what our consciousness is like when we do service. I oftentimes do this. I see, you know, am I doing it in the right consciousness, or am I doing it because I'm angry or I want to please someone? You know, so all these different ways, as we gradually practice devotional service, we get to see what's our desire for doing the service, or what's the motive behind performing this service. And of course, we can check with the senior devotees and the spiritual masters. And the most intelligent thing to do, of course, is to not get bogged down and start thinking, oh, I'll never make it, I'm so fallen, I'm so sinful. You know, we just have to keep on going with the process, as Srila Prabhupada said. You know, no matter, you know, different people will say, oh, ISKCON is like this, it's like that, but we just continue with our process. Oh, this chanting is too easy, it's not perfection, we just still continue. And as Srila Prabhupada would say, you know, the dog will bark, but the caravan will keep going. Because we know what the goal, what our goal is. We're performing devotional service with a specific goal in mind, and that is to please Krishna, to please Krishna's desires. So when we please Krishna, we also automatically become happy. You know, as I mentioned yesterday, Gangeshwar Prabhu, or 2 days ago, was mentioning how with the different yoga systems, or, you know, Brahman realization or Paramatma realization, they only bring us to a specific point of realizing, you know, yes, the temporary nature of the world, realizing, yes, that we are eternal, realizing that there is a Supreme Person. But they don't really give us that realization that we're eternal servants of God. And that is something that, you know, the same devotional service does, because with the process of devotional service, we get to extinguish this false ego that we have of wanting to be the supreme, which easily comes by being given or by having different yogic perfections. It's very easy for us to think, now I'm God or now I'm powerful. Whereas with the devotional service, even if you make rapid advancements and progress, Krishna will always, you know, let you know that you're actually a servant. No matter how big you are, no matter how, you know, how much you've achieved in terms of preaching or whatever, you're just a servant and you should remain like that. So the process of devotional service also humbles us to make us really understand that no matter how far we go, no matter what we achieve, it all comes from Krishna, and Krishna can take it away at any point. Whereas in the other system, because we're, you know, with our intelligence or with our physical body, we're performing all these acts, it's easy to think, yes, this is me doing it. Mm-hmm. Or you have a guru for some time and then you go up to a certain level, and then at some point you just kick him away and say, yes, now I'm also God. But the process of devotional service, you know, when you practice it, there's no way that we can think that we're God, because our false ego gets worked on all the time, especially in the association of devotees. And as in the previous chapter, in one of the text 26, the Prabhupada is explaining how when you practice devotional service, you get immediate reciprocation. So even when you're doing something wrong, you know, you'll know that you're not following properly, because Krishna, out of his kindness, corrects us. It corrects the mentality. If we're thinking we want to enjoy or do so many things like that. And I'll just read one quote from, I read this in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And this is explaining how the verse Srila Prabhupada would quote to explain sadhana bhakti, the process that we're following in order to become perfect. So this is Madhya Leela, chapter 22, text 105. So the Sanskrit is Kriti Saja Bhagat Saja Bhava Sajana Bhita Nitya Saja Sabhavyasa Pratyam Hiri Sajata. When transcendental devotional service by which love for Krishna is attained is executed by the senses, it is called sadhana or the regulative discharge of devotional service. Such devotion eternally exists within the heart of every living entity. The awakening of this eternal devotion is the potentiality of devotional service in practice. And the essence of the sadhana bhakti is to fix the mind on Krishna. So this is, you know, all of these different systems speak a lot about controlling the mind and the senses. And this statement in the Madhya Leela, Lord Chaitanya, of course, is explaining how the only way or the only method by which we can actually attain perfection for the mind and for the senses is to engage in sadhana bhakti. And we've heard that famous example from, you know, His Holiness Devaramita Swami when he was speaking about how he knew this Buddhist monk and he had been practicing for so many years. And then he was somewhere meditating and someone passes with a boombox and it's this song, Tell Laura I Love Her, Tell Laura I Miss Her. Mm-hmm. And then that was it. And then he started crying. And then that's like, okay, so you've been doing this yoga for so long, but you haven't really dealt with what's in the heart. There's so many things that are stuck in the heart that we're still attached to because we might be doing all this renunciation, this charity, but we're not dealing with what's in the heart, the desires of the soul. Because we all want reciprocation, we all want love. That's what's in us as entities, as living entities. So if it's in Krishna in full, Krishna has all the 64 qualities, and we have similar qualities, not all of them. We have, is it 55 or 50? The jiva has 55 of those qualities. So there is that quality to want to have some reciprocation with the Lord, to want to have a relationship with the Lord, to exchange some love, to have this ras. But if we stick to a specific yoga system, it will only take us so much further in our advancement. But the highest, of course, is to really dig deep into the core of the heart, where the soul is, where our false ego is covered, and to unpack it and dust it off. So that we can really see what the scriptures are saying about who is Bhagavan, that Krishna is Bhagavan. And only He is the enjoyer and the controller, that we are His parts and parcels and we're meant to serve Him. The part is meant to serve the whole. So in the next few days, we'll go more into the details of performing the eight primary and the other 10 secondary processes of mystic yoga and what one achieves by practicing those, and the way the Lord of course reveals it and the way the Lord has structured it is to make us aware of how supreme bhakti yoga is and how much we should take it to heart and how seriously we should take it. So I'll stop there. I'll just finish off by reading one thing. I was reading the Nectar of Devotion, and this point really struck me when it was explaining the four different qualities of Krishna that no one else possesses. Dharivya Goswami also mentioned it in the ways of devotion. And he was saying, what makes Krishna's activities sweet? And the response is that the submission to those who love Him, you don't find... Yeah, the submission to those who love Him. So if you look at the other system, whether it's like Sangha Yoga or Jnana Yogis or the Brahmavadis or the Mayavadis, Krishna doesn't become subservient. If you look at the relationship Krishna has with Mother Yashoda, with the gopis, with Uddhava, with Arjuna, certain things they're so high and so elevated that it's not very simple for us to understand how the supreme controller, Krishna, who possesses all these qualities, how he can become so minute that he goes into every atom, and at the same time he's Mahavishnu lying on the ocean and he's creating millions and billions of universes, and at the same time he's a cowherd boy playing with his friends or milking cows or running around. So this is something that only can be understood by the process of bhakti or devotional service, and we'll see why that is so as we progress through the week. So I'll stop there to ask if there's any comments or questions. Yes, kind of any problem. Serving and not trying to control.
Like, how do you say that mood of always trying to be a servant instead of trying to enjoy it, or, you know, be angry or trying to control something?
Okay, that's a good question. Of course, all these things come over time. Like how when you do yoga, any kind of yoga, you have to develop that patience, and you have to develop that confidence that, you know, that Krishna is going to reciprocate with the sincere endeavor that we're performing. So in devotional service, because we have so many past samskaras or impressions in the mind of just enjoying and want to do things our way, or that, you know, if it's not done our way, then, you know, it can't be done anyway. So it's very good for us to understand that when we do service, it's not that Krishna really is so desperate that he doesn't have anyone else to do that service. You know, it's not that Krishna, you know, he needs someone to give him his flute. You know, Krishna has so many servants who are even more qualified than ourselves. So when we're practicing devotional service, you know, this is Krishna's blessing, this is Krishna's mercy of saying, okay, you don't have the vision to see me, or you don't have the qualification to enter into, you know, the spiritual world, but I will come in the Acharya-Vibha form, and in that way you'll have ways in which you can perform devotional service. So we have to be able to gradually, as we perform devotional service, we train our mind and think, you know, Krishna is giving me this service so that I can become better, so that I can improve. And that is a consciousness that, you know, that comes about over time. It doesn't switch on immediately. I once wrote to my spiritual master and I asked him about, you know, I was reading about the different qualities devotees should have, and I was just lamenting about, you know, just how pathetic I am in that department. And I was also telling him about reading Bhagavatam and all these things. And he was saying that, you know, in order for us to fall in love with devotional service, that it's something that is going to happen over the time, and we have to give it very, you know, great attention, and we really have to be sincere and serious about it. And in that way, those qualities will manifest. And the most important thing to do, of course, is to try and chant attentively. Because if we chant attentively, then our service is going to be done in a very attentive manner. So everything that we do actually just stems from our chanting. How attentive are we in chanting? Because if we're spaced out, or if we're not chanting properly, then our service won't be so proper, because it's not filled with Krishna, it's filled with other things that block our devotional service. So these qualities manifest in a sadaka when Krishna sees that we're ready, even just to have confidence or enthusiasm. It comes, it's not just it will come from our doing, but it manifests a lot. Even all these qualities will come via the medium of the spiritual master. They're already there in the heart, but we just need to purify this desire to want to be the center of everything. So the number one thing, just to try to chant attentively and to try and create a consciousness that Krishna is giving us a service and we should try and do it to the best of our ability. Even if we think, you know, rather tie it in a bow instead of making a knot. You know what I mean? So sometimes we might think, no, this picture should be there because it looks nice according to us. But another devotee will come and say, no, it should be there. And Srila Prabhupada always explained that, you know, it's not good to argue amongst devotees. You know, we should just try and cooperate, and that's how we show our love for him. Like that. I mean, there's heaps of practical ways for different situations. But if you stop ourselves just during the thinking process of thinking, okay, let me act like this, let me not act like that, instead of already acting it out. If we just start from the thinking process, from the mind, and stop the mind from going, from being a monkey, then things might be better. We always have a point of patience. People come over time. You want to say something? I was thinking from the the jiva has 50 qualities, and then Brahma and Shiva have 55, and then Narayan has 1 to 60, has 60 of those qualities, and Krishna of course has more than 64, but you know the 64 primary qualities of Krishna. Okay, Jai Gantra Chimad Bhagavatam Ki, Shri Prabhupada Ki, Jai Nitya Guru Pramanandam.